This is Saha Says. Let's get to it.
Welcome to this week's Saha Says. Tonight on the podcast, we are talking about NCCDC, and I'm your host, Sciatic Nerd, along with Vesh, we've got Cooper, and we've got Ivory Wolf all on the line together here. And if you have been maybe under a rock, you didn't know in the InfoSec community that the National Collegiate Cyber Defense Competition took place here in San Antonio this weekend. Now, it's been announced just an hour ago that the University of Central Florida defeated 9 other finalist teams to win the 2016 competition, earning the title National Champion for the 3rd year in a row. The championship NCCDC competition was held here the weekend, of course, of the 22nd through the 24th, along with Fiesta going on, so it's a huge weekend here. Now, this is also a competition among the top 10 colleges and university teams from across the nation facing off to protect a network against constant cyber attacks. So literally, you have these separate teams who are performing as if they had shown up, and they're all doing the same scenario, and each of them have to protect the same type network across each of the rooms, and they work to keep it up and functioning, while a dastardly red team, made up of some of the more notable names in this field, come to San Antonio to hammer on these nice folks, and everybody learns from this. So, with that in mind, Coop, I understand you actually volunteered this time through. Why don't you tell us what that was like?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not as gifted as the guys that I met that were on the red team, so I instead helped out where I could by doing the white team. And I'm sure you're probably thinking the same thing I thought when I first heard it. White team? What is that? But it's basically like you're an official in the room, just making sure that there's nobody cheating, pulling outside equipment. The red team's not coming in there. Nobody's really affecting the competition in any way. And at certain points, you also do some scoring. But I did it mainly because this is my first time doing it. Getting to see this competition for what it is. They didn't have this when I was originally back in college. I am so jealous of you youngins. Oh, man.
Judging from some of the pictures of the CCDC competition, I would say that youngins is not quite the word I'd use on occasion. There are definitely some older participants in here. It's not just college kids.
Yeah, those guys were the military.
So you get some.
It's a good mix. It's a good mix of folks. Okay, sorry, Coop. Keep going.
I was really impressed when I got to take the tour, got to see all the work that they put into it. Jess, one of our members, oh man, she and her team, they've brought this competition from nothing over the years and just really made it impressive. Like even down to the real-time scoring of showing the teammates could come into the central ops room and be able to see full-time, real-time, what services were online and not, and also across the board, other teams, how they were being affected. You could see the whole thing. And the same thing also was reflected in the red team room. And as far as the red team goes, you might wonder how many of these guys were attacking each separate college team. They had 30 hackers total in their full professional pen testers, 3 assigned per team. Well, also it's a 20 members that are just rotated in each year, but there's also a core team that are really, some of the best in the industry. Like the faces I was able to recognize were like Mubix and Egypt. Script Junkie was there representing Saha. Also got to hear about Linus from Haha coming in on Saturday, joining the attack. It just surprised me with the quality of people coming in to help out the college students and prepping for a real professional career as a sysadmin. And, that's what I saw when I was sitting there Friday, judging and watching it. It made me laugh because I was like, this is like working at a startup. But I was told that Saturday was going to be totally different, where that's when the red team would totally come out, excuse me, and attack. So then it would be go from, you know, average day as a sysadmin, a startup, just trying to stand up services. Then it became as if you're working in a big company where you got attacked and you're trying to get it back up, maintain it, and attack, be able to stop the attack and protect your services. Because the first day, they're just getting back doors, getting logs, watching, and seeing if the kids are able to see them at all and, you know, maybe make notice of it, do something. They're just under the wire waiting, getting ready. And then the second day, it's just no holds bar. Everything goes red.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, that's why I was really wanting to go back the next day. Unfortunately, other things came up. But it makes me excited at the possibility of my, since I am myself going back to school, it makes me want to start now leveraging my own spot to a college team so I get to see it from a totally different vantage point, you know, next year.
By the way, that red team, that is like trying to guard a garden shed with just some baling wire, you know, and you've got tanks rolling through. The yep. amount of talent that consists of that red team is enormous.
Oh yeah.
So they're all incredibly experienced. This is, if you would still see a complete shutdown of services, if these kids and folks that were older had weeks to set up, these guys would find a way in. So, I played with weeks before on the regionals, and a couple of us have. And I got to tell you, there's just no way that these guys are not getting in and maintaining some level of persistence.
That's one of the really amazing things. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was looking at they had some of the some reports on the diversity of the teams and everything, like with regard to like racial and gender identities.
Diversity.
I got to tell you. Yeah, I mean, the UCF team, very diverse. The Brigham Young one, they actually did a story on how diverse they were. So
half, you know, and half, 50% male, female.
Yeah, and it's without some silly.
Oh, we lost you there. Back up for a second and say it again. Without a silly
quota,
what?
Quota system. It just happened in there. You know, yeah, it's without a silly quota system. You know, they just these kids just naturally rose to the top. They let them, you know, and look what happened. They got a nice diverse crowd. Everybody seemed to be happy with one another, and you know, they took away some wins. Mm-hmm. So you can't, you know, you can't come back and be shitty about it in a couple of weeks and say, yeah, well, they had to pick one from this category and two from that category. So, no, that wasn't the reality. This is what happens when you just let everybody jump in. You'll see that diversity genuinely develop.
Best player on each team. And yeah, you'll be surprised with what you can get.
And actually, that's the thing is Raytheon released an article actually talking about keystrokes to victory. Then they talked about 5 pro tips on winning a hacker contest. And they bring up the different kinds of competitions. And they say even with the one, the Hack the Pentagon that's going on, I know I've got the name wrong, but you know what I'm talking about. And they've got a competition of all kinds, and it takes all kinds. And this, to see the diversity actually coming out on its own is far better. I mean, no one wants to see, like Vesh said, you don't want to have to see it pushed. No one should have to be forced to do something they don't want to do. The idea is that there's a natural growth and a progression. And we face there's a lot of challenges out there, from technical learning to a lot worse stuff that can happen. Vesh, you were actually bringing up before, I think, before the show got on, you were talking about actually some of those challenges, weren't you?
Yeah. So what I noticed over a few DEF CONs, maybe this has gotten better since I haven't been to a DEF CON in a little while, a couple years or so. But I noticed something that we lovingly used to call a beta male syndrome occurring heavily at some of these hacker events, specifically DEF CON. And I think it arises from you got a group of guys. This isn't, you know, this isn't hatred towards any particular class of people, but it's what happens when you know, this used to, this field, this InfoSec field used to not be a very illustrative field. There weren't any awards. You know, computing was generally considered a dorky activity. I mean, when I was in high school, I had to hide my video game playing from my friends because I could catch a football, you know, and I'd get a, you know, and I'd catch it, you know, I couldn't catch football very well, but I still tried. And so I would catch, but I'd catch off of my buddies for being some type of, you know, some type of video game playing guy. And so what happened was you'd see these guys that never had that opportunity in the sun. They never were hoisted a trophy. They never really saw any accolades other than maybe parental or some scholastic ones. And then they go to these places where they are the show. They are the star. And they get, maybe this happens in show business too, they get this this attitude about them because they're in a group of their peers, this, you know, largely beta male pool of people, and or beta anything really. And then you see some real assholes rise from this pool. You know, they don't know how to handle themselves in a social setting. I went up to try to thank a couple people for a good talk. And they just, you know, if you didn't know them, they were like, you know, F you, what are you doing here? You know, who are you?
Oh, wow.
So that's, yeah. And I mean, it's not a, you know, my feelings weren't hurt or anything. I was just like, well, look, you know, whatever happens here stays here. I don't care. I just want to congratulate you on a good talk. You don't need to be a jackass about it.
Sure.
So, but I think that happens fairly, that happens, pretty regularly, I think.
No, so. Actually, Vesh, you're right. I mean, even still today, it happens at DEF CON. Because what happens is that DEF CON has grown really out of proportion, that what DEF CON really stood for, you kind of do that, you know, in smaller groups away from DEF CON nowadays. Because it is true. Unless, you know, there's some good friends that are actually speaking at DEF CON, I'll check out a couple of the talks, but a lot of times they will, you know, say, hey, that was a good talk, interesting. And they'll be like talking to you like you're beneath them when you've been to DEF CON more times than them. So it's like, yeah, you're not that special.
Yeah, that's, I get that feeling, yeah.
Because you have to admit that there is a growing, changing dynamic here where you see people, like has been said, there were no competitions that suited their ability set, right? So if you have a skill, go all Liam Neeson, you know, I have a particular set of skills. I can do X, Y, and Z. But you don't see that on a football field. You don't maybe see that running around the track. But you'll see it if you look at probably 3:30 in the morning with you know, too much caffeine and in the dark with Unce music on or whatever the music of choice is. And despite the fact that the public would seem to think that all of this activity amounts to negative activity and it, you have to be wearing a hoodie at the same time as performing these actions, the truth is that there are competitions built specifically around that, and that's what the CTF really is. CTF is a capture the flag, is here is a PVE, a player versus environment kind of scenario in most cases, where NCCDC represents a different type of challenge. And isn't that what goes on at DEF CON in numerous different battlefields, if you will, preset battlefields and stages? People come up, they run in, they do their shtick, they come in and say, okay, so we're making up a fake company that we're going to stand up here, called Real Corp or something to these effects. I know there are, they, over the years, they've changed the name of the fake company that you're attacking. But the idea is how well was it built to be defended? What steps were taken? What knowledge do you have? What can you learn? If you go and look up, there's a gentleman from the Security Endeavors podcast. His name is ForgottenSec. He helped contribute largely to the CTF wiki that's out there as he would travel and go and compete in different capture the flag scenarios. And that's one of the harder things. Even here at B-Sides SATX, the CTF was a repeat last year from the year before. And so some of the players come out and they repeat the same exact moves. And so you have to keep upping the ante because you're going to start building competitors who can jump that high, who can go that far, who know what to look for. And that's kind of what we should be working towards, isn't it? Is building our corporate level of knowledge. You know, maybe it isn't called the Picard maneuver or whatever non-nerd thing you want to do. Call it a certain type of stratagem. The point is, these things are going to become more common as we see the rise of actual computer competitors. Wouldn't you agree, guys?
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, I'm hoping that these, you know, some of these folks that have real translatable skills, as opposed to, you know, being able to kick a field goal.
Right.
I'm hoping that some of these guys do get, you know, get the accolades that they deserve. My point wasn't to denigrate or anything like that.
No, not at all.
Just because I could run the 400, right? You know, that doesn't mean that I'm going to I would crap on their accomplishments. I'm actively seeking their same accomplishments. I'm trying to get better in a field where I'm lacking. So
we should learn from each other. I agree.
Yeah, I'm just trying to keep as a warning, keep some of these folks away, some of these guys away from behavior I think leads into other worse territories that we're seeing now, as reported in sciatic nerve. What was that report with the harassment at competitions or the harassment at conferences?
Right. So this is one of it's reported as a lingering problem remaining for women in a number of conferences for harassment and prejudice. In a recent example, women were targeted at an after party of Human and Internet Rights Conference it's called RightsCon. And that was in over the weekend of March 30th and April 1st in San Francisco. And there were numerous incidents of sexual harassment at at a certain party, and they mentioned it on Twitter publicly. They announced it as a recognized problem. And to their credit, they said, look, this is not right. And the folks who are perpetrating these things need to be called out on it. And even so, it's further proof that even with code of conduct documentation at certain events, it still doesn't stop people from learning how to act in public, right? There's still people acting out in a negative way, and it's just not appropriate because they're saying, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but a bit of decorum, just have a bit of decorum. But I don't think the irony is lost on anybody that this was at a place called RightsCon, and arguably the most my right sensitive area of the country. It's RightsCon. It's in San Francisco, and people are getting harassed there. And I think that there's some folks in the community that could stand to take a lesson or two.
Yeah.
From maybe other areas where they got over this. Oh, what was it like Tailhook, for example?
Oh, wow.
The Navy, the big Navy harassment thing. You know, how long did it take them to get over that? That's a bunch of
it's a growth process. It's a frustrating growth process where you see that, again, I generically refer to it as people learning how to act. And we all suffer. We can all do better. Everybody can do better. One of my favorite ways I saw this actually handled, because not like we're going to pick and choose, but the point is they actually kind of like it soccer event. They'd red card you, or, you get a creeper card. They could basically, people who felt they were being made uncomfortable could actually hand a card over and say, here you go. And they just, split, because it's a way of saying, this is getting into a territory I don't want. I'm handing this off. I am out. At the same time, the irony is not lost. Vesh, you're absolutely right. In San Francisco, of all the places, man, that is surprising.
And it's sad because, I have daughters and, Vesh has daughters. And, one of the things is if my daughters choose to follow in my footsteps, I would prefer that they don't have to deal with this shit. Because if this stuff does happen, then, daddy's not going to be happy and daddy's going to take action. And daddy's willing to go to jail.
Thank you for announcing that and putting that on the record here. So when we publish this, No. So the actual point is that we do care. As people, we should care about each other's feelings. We should care about how we approach and handle one another. And especially in an industry that is so, it doesn't need to be any one particular people group or anything. This computing is something that everybody, heck, even other robots are doing it. Okay. So when we get down to, the actual brass tacks of seeing someone in industry getting called out for saying, oh, it's cute that you set up your boyfriend's laptop. Why are we still doing this in this day and age? It doesn't make any sense. We should have moved beyond this, but it turns out that time and again, going back to Shakespeare or any other relatively timeless story, the problem isn't that you move towards a utopian society, it's that you bring people with you, and people are imperfect beings. We're going to mess up, and we're going to bring our thoughts, prejudices, and right or wrong, our desires and actions with us. And, you know, there maybe needs to be something said about how we handle ourselves in large group settings. Because it said it was at an after party. It wasn't during the day, for the most part. The real calling out of issues came from the after party event. And everybody should be allowed to unwind. So what's the right answer? How do we unwind together without causing red cards? So there's a problem that is not going to go away by an algorithm or necessarily by code of conduct, but we can all try a little harder.
That's very true, and it really comes down to taking care of each other. You know, a lot of these things that occur is because, like what Vesh mentioned, you know, it's the beta males, but it's also, you know, the alpha males, because they think that, you know, some of them feel that they are above all, and they will sit there and push down on not just the guys, but especially the ladies in the field, because it's like, wait a minute. It's like, I know this guy, and I pushed him off the edge because I didn't think he was worth anything. What can you bring to the table?
Right.
And that attitude is rampant, and it is. It's bad.
So, I mean, at what point do we... Okay, so there are two points that I would like to share here, and you can stop me if you get to it, but there is a need to recognize two short things. One is we are dealing with an issue where we have to get to the point of saying we're just people. We're not addressing gender. I think that's the only way to get past the fill-in-the-blank in tech, fill-in-the-blank month. It should be just a month. It should just be people working in tech. As long as we keep addressing it as a separate issue, we actually help perpetuate that. That's just my opinion, and not everyone's going to agree with that, and that's fine. The other side of that is, well, you know what? If we are going to have, we have a responsibility, if we are going to put ourselves in the limelight or in the public space, to recognize how we act and think, and maybe either go to a Toastmasters meeting or go and watch or read up on public speaking or practice a little bit to see how we want to be perceived. Because as Vesh said, as Ivory Wolf mentioned, all of us actually have mentioned Coop too, there's just very little experience for some of the people in this arena to have had the exposure to feel comfortable up there. So maybe they get nervous, and we all get different when we get nervous, right? We don't perform at our best if we feel under pressure. Or maybe some of us feel like we do, but that isn't always the right way to make an impression on people. There are the history is rife with celebrities making mistakes in a social setting, and that being how people perceive them, going on for years. They don't get to be who they really are, because we get stuck on, oh, that one's the perky one, so they always have to act the certain way. Oh, there's the suave, cool, quiet one, when maybe that look on their face means they have gas. Who knows? Maybe they're thinking about something deep and brooding. We don't know. The point is, it's more than perception, and we should be aware of it if we're going to put ourselves in that position. And I'm done. Okay.
I don't think Brett Favre had gas during the whole ESPN Caitlyn Jenner thing when they zoomed in on him. I don't think that was gas. But yeah. I just want to go back and explain a little bit about, you know, my statement of alpha over beta. And that's just a synopsis of people, you know, that's just a categorization of of people and activities and how they usually live their daily lives and how outgoing versus how introverted they are. And the why I classify it that way is that when you are kind of that leader of the pack there, every now and then you are A, embarrassed, or B, might have to take a shot in the mouth. You know, it's I've been on the receiving end of several bad decisions. And that's just saying that, look, you make a statement, and a lot of times when you have that that more prevalent status there, you're gonna pay for it in spades. You know, you might not see it like, you know, as a guy who hasn't been part of that stratum, you might not see that, but speaking as somebody who actually had been, you know, at the top of a clique every now and then that I had. It's not when you fall, it hurts, and it hurts big time. It mm-hmm. hurts. What I would have rather been a background character in some of the, you know, on some of the falls that I took. So that's just me. I'm not saying that I'm not downgrading anybody's status. All I'm saying is that, you know, for there are a couple of different ways that people handle situations and the situations that are thrown at them. So it's, you know, kind of like people handling, you know, maybe this is the first time they've encountered somebody trying to get into a field that they want to get into, you know, somebody looking for an interesting story or something. And I think that maybe that's what leads into our next article about Matthew Keyes, the journalist that is just got the proverbial book thrown at him for handing over credentials to, was it the LA Times website, I think?
Yep. And so for the first time, the judge has thrown out evidence obtained via a piece of FBI malware. Am I grabbing the wrong story there?
No, wrong story.
Excuse me.
This is so talking about the journalist that handed over keys to Anonymous so that they were able to perform a hack a lot easier, or defamation of a website. Not really a hack if you got the keys given to you.
So he told.
Yeah, and
oh, go ahead.
I'm so tempted to go the other way on this because, first off, some people are, when it suits them, are so willing to give somebody maybe a little bit of credit where none is deserved. I mean, how much of a journalist was this guy, right? Was he Walter Cronkite? No, he was a guy editing the social media portal or the social media section of a newspaper in a smaller market. You know, the LA Times, of course, isn't a small newspaper, but this, I don't believe that he was actually on the staff of the LA Times at there. I believe he just had credentials to the social media area, and that led to the hack. Now, doing what the Justice Department is doing is absurd. I'm not saying that it isn't. You know, you're charging him with hacking when he handed over the keys to the kingdom. But that's, you're charging him like a terrorist for basically playing what would be
right
anywhere else a prank, you know?
Yeah, but if we look at the actual article, now that I'm pointed in the right direction, looking at the article, it says that prosecutors alleged that Keyes was a disgruntled ex-employee of a TV station owned by the same company, and that he shared his credentials with the people who were going to be doing the hack. And so basically giving them rights to go in and go mess with stuff, basically giving them, as you put it, keys to the kingdom. But then the suggestion is that the government's true motivation was to bully him into revealing source material that he had gathered in the months he spent investigating them. Mm-hmm. So if the goal was to bully him into revealing something, you're just basically putting a knee or a boot on the person's neck to try and get the other thing loosened up? You're shaking the person's tree just trying to get him to give it up?
You're also making an example of him, you might say, for his assisted theft. Like if you leave your keys in your car and park it in a bad neighborhood and walk away, that's considered assisted theft. Basically the same thing. Giving the keys in order to commit a crime, you know, it's not, you know, not a hack. It's just assisted, you know, vandalism. That's all that really went down there. It's like, you know, he handed him the paint can and said,
sure.
Hey, they won't be watching at during this time and this time. Go have fun.
Yeah, but even
well,
the...
To,
no, go ahead.
To be fair, if you tell somebody, you know, if you tell somebody, hey, my wife's asleep, now's the time to go do it, you know, that's right. Whatever happens in that house, you're going to be charged as an accessory to you.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
But that shouldn't be labeling you as a terrorist and then making an example of you just because you didn't flip and assist, you know, the Justice Department in their investigation.
Well, and the other thing is that what was really harmed here, if you go back and I think read some of the back material, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure that some will see some comments or something, but this was a case where they were actually going back to the LA Times or the Tribune or whoever was actually working with the government to get this guy was they were telling, hey, lawyers that work for us, could you charge $1,000 an hour instead of $400 an hour so that we can get this thing knocked up to a higher level of indictment? And that's garbage. That's BS. You know, just what damage was done? You know, what happened to damage calculations in these things? You know, if all that happened was somebody's website got defaced for, the headline was discovered within 40 minutes and then corrected within 3 minutes, that's it. That was the damage. But that's all that happened. I mean, and now they're saying that this guy is part, if that's all that happened to that webpage, who does this guy know? I mean, who does this guy know that they need to reveal sources for? You know, he doesn't know anybody that bad because all they did was deface this one website. If you'd have given that to anybody with even a modicum of skill, there'd be backdoors all over the place, and there would have been enough data downloaded to make those Panama papers look like nothing.
But isn't that the point? Isn't that the other side of the coin? Is that they're coming after this guy like he did something, like he was exposing them to that level of risk. So is it the perception of risk or the actual provable risk? Which is it?
Well, in this country, we're supposed to prosecute people based on what they did, not what they could have done.
Oh, yeah. Hey, probable cause, assisted. Well, Coop, what did you just say it was? If you park it, in other words, if you set it up to take
assisted
the fall.
Assisted theft.
Assisted theft. Okay, so I offer someone who has more skills than I do or different skills than I have and say, go practice your art against that target. You're pointing the fire hose at them. So is it my fault that I happen to know somebody who's got skills and knowledge and I ask you to just scare them a little? Right? Don't we see that in a lot of really badly scripted films? I was just going to scare him a little. So
yeah, that's the beginning of every when Dennis Farina finally breaks down the guy in Law and Order.
Yes,
and the guy starts crying. I was just going to scare him a little.
Yes,
and then Farina goes back to eat, you know, an 8 foot long pole of sausage.
Oh, gosh.
We have you coming out of the morning.
We need a soundboard going now.
Yeah. That's
I've been watching a lot of Crime Story. By the way, that's look at it this way. Crime Story has Dennis Farina.
Yeah.
And as one of the good guys, yeah. And along with several other, you know, actors that are much more well-known these days than they were back then.
Right.
Julia Roberts was in it for a few episodes.
Really?
And Max Goldman was played by Andrew Dice Clay.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, one of the guys played. Who knew he could act? Well, I mean, he's basically playing himself, but who knew that himself was a pretty good mobster?
Oh.
It was like watching
watching this
Goodfellas
on YouTube? Where are you watching this?
Well, it's available on Hulu, but I'm watching it through I'm watching it through YouTube and other means. If you want to pay for it, it's on Hulu.
That's where everyone should just go get Hulu if that's what they want to do. But it's just an option.
One of the sub headings under this podcast is comedy satire, you know, so
yes.
You can't come after me because I have the satire logo.
There we go. Very good. Nice. So. Satires. It's good.
That will help you from the DOJ.
Okay. So before we go down any further down that road, the point was that you see all these other actors and actresses who have been in other things, which, again, you know, okay, so it's Crime Story, which is what? That's circa 80-something, isn't it?
Yeah, 85, 86.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's not new. I watched that one. That was on, I think it was, I want to say CBS. I could be wrong, but I watched that when it first came out, and I thought that was really a well-done set of stories, a good way to tell the story. And it was competing with the now defunct Law and Order machine. They only have one leg left standing, but my goodness, what a far-reaching concept. And that is the point, again, is that we have this lexicon of things we're used to hearing over and over again, like the I was just going to scare him. You wind up with this lexicon of preset issues where people assume one thing because they see another, right? Causation is not... wait, I'm going to say this wrong. It's
correlation, not necessarily following causation.
Thank you. There it is. And that's the issue that we have, is because we pre-connect the dots. Just because this person worked with those, with people of another potential skill set, does not make that person, by association, guilty. And that's not enough. Again, if you know someone who sprays graffiti and you hand them a can and say, look at that car over there, that still doesn't, you know, they still have their own mind. They can choose to do what they're going to do. But again, we have to find another way to learn that hacking is not a crime. That's why I think that we need to make sure that we focus on the fact that computer crime is separate from the act of practicing your craft, whatever your craft is, which I'm going back to the Stephen Levy referenced source documentation for what hacking is. And I'm sure there's even more deeper and better sources than going back to the Hacker's Book from 1980-something.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the whether or not hacking is a crime. I actually think that that might that might be written into law at this point, that hacking is XYZ, and if you do that, then it's against the law, right? But, I think there might be actual words on the book now that say this hacking is against the law.
This hacking. Yeah, okay, fine. So I'm not going to go further down that road. Let's move instead to the idea of, where is it? I have this other article that was ready to go with why messaging
about
bots.
The judge throwing out the evidence obtained through their own malware attacks. I'm guessing that's where we're headed, right?
Yep.
No, it's called a network investigative technique.
It's not
malware or a hacking tool. It's not a hacking tool. It's a network investigative technique.
So this is another Motherboard article, and it just – sorry, keep going. I just wanted to make sure we mentioned that it's from Motherboard. It's another article from them.
Oh, that's right. We are sourcing our things.
Motherboard,
yes, this is from
– MotherboardVice.com.
Yeah, Motherboard and Vice do a good job. I mean, you can say what you want about some of their other reporting, but they actually do have a hold of some decent tech editors that will go back and – they're, as far as I know, and as far as I can tell, and with my, you know, particular expertise, limited as it is, this might be some of the better reporting I've seen on a lot of things. And it's concise too. It's so concise that we can actually expand on it in a talk, which is good. So, and still stay to the body of work that they have. So, but this guy, Joseph Cox, the guy who wrote it, was basically saying that, hey, here we go. Here is the first time a judge has kicked back on the FBI for hacking their way past a warrant, effectively. And they said, look, you need a warrant. You need a warrant. And if you do not have one, everything, it's fruit, whatever you gain after that's fruit from the poisonous tree invalid ab initio, like from the start,
right?
Yeah, void ab initio from the start,
not
right?
Submittable from the start, because they didn't have extra warrants
exactly
for each layer of the hack.
And they actually show that there in a cutaway pull quote. And it says, based on the foregoing analysis, the court concludes that the NIT warrant was issued without jurisdiction and was thus void ab initio. It follows that the resulting search was conducted as though there were no warrant whatsoever, since warrantless searches are presumptively unreasonable and the good faith exception is inapplicable, the evidence must be excluded. Accordingly, Levin's motion to suppress is granted. So, the idea that... Oh, go ahead.
They always go for the throat on these. They try to get the most egregious things passed in the most obscene instances, right? Like they use they're using a child pornography case in this instance, you know, instead of once again in this they're not catching these guys. They're not catching the actual, they're trying to conduct these large sting operations and get it to, and these guys that are viewing these disgusting pictures, right? They're trying to get the guys manufacturing it. They're trying to find the people behind the abuse, but unfortunately, all they're doing, and it's the same thing they did with the mob stuff back in the 70s and the 80s, is they ended up, you know, they ended up moving people into different areas. They're even legitimizing some of these folks. They didn't catch who they wanted to, you know, they never ended up catching the Sicilian guys until it was way too late. They didn't, I'm trying to remember the mobster that, was it one of the Genoveses guys, one of the crime family guys, he died comfortably in his house at about 90.
Sure, because they couldn't prosecute. So much
yeah, exactly. Because you know, they got everybody below him, but they never got the guy who was running the operation. That's just so that's what they're trying to do here. But they're, look, even if it is the most vile and disgusting person on the planet, when it comes down to it, and this is the case with prostitution and a couple other things too, you are going in guns blazing to an area where nobody's armed.
Right. This again is one of those strange situations where you don't have a smoking gun that you can point at in a readily identifiable way, if is what I'm understanding what you're saying.
What I'm saying is that it's flat out hard. You see, they select these cases because nobody wants to defend a friggin' child, a guy looking at kiddie porn. Nobody wants to defend that guy. Nobody wants to even broach the subject because it is such a reprehensible act. So the FBI goes, "Oh, we'll use this," and nobody will bat an eye. Nobody will even bat an eye. And in this case, the judge came back and said, "I don't care who it is. I don't care if Hitler, Mussolini, and Stalin had a baby, and you were going after that baby, you know." This is wrong, even if the people that you were chasing after are disgusting.
And one thing I'd like to draw your attention to in the article is it shows that Judge Young, his move hinged around the one warrant used to authorize all of the computer intrusions. Lawyers had raised issues with this before. Colin Fiamin, a defender in a related case, told Motherboard that it effectively authorizes unlimited number of searches against unidentified targets anywhere in the world. And EFF filed a strongly worded amicus brief in another affected case and called the warrant completely unconstitutional.
Man.
So it just makes you wonder, you know, if they would have gotten away with it, would they have cited it further on, later on in other cases to, you know, further destroy digital rights again and again? You know, it's, even though, like you said, you know, it's dealing with CP, nobody's going to touch that. No, they want to see this guy burn, but where do you draw the line? Is freedom defending the flag that flies over your head, or defending the rights of someone that you totally disagree with burning that flag in protest of in their own opinion? Where do you draw the line of freedom?
That's a big question.
This is no better than when and they trot out, you know, a bunch of these of poor kids, and then they ask for another $100 billion in some type of funding, because the last $100 billion that they threw down the hole, surprise surprise, didn't exactly work. So it's
same. Speaking of throwing money down a hole, how much did they spend on that Apple case? Yeah. Hacking that Apple iPhone over a mill, right?
Something like that. Well,
what did
that
they get from that? Nothing.
That was just.
I see. And RoboVesh is calling in here.
I believe they might think money's worth now.
There we go.
There we go. He's back.
Oh, yeah. Well,
sorry. Yeah, if you want to go back and say that one more thing.
Look, RoboVesh is just trying to relate to the Chinese restaurant robot waiter.
Nice.
Oh, okay. Segway.
So that actually turned out to be a complete and total disaster. They were offline in under a week. They couldn't take orders. They couldn't deliver the food. They couldn't. All of that's hilarious because, you know, we love the science fiction versus science fact concept. But, you know, hey, look, we've got these. The article calls them ultra creepy. I don't know how creepy they are, but when I went to office product supply conference when I was, like 8. And they trot out this, you know, remote controlled machine that looks like it can talk to you when, you know, if you look around the corner, there's a guy with a remote for, that you'd see very similar to, used for flying a remote plane. And he's got a microphone on his head and he's able to chat through the bot. And I was completely taken in and I thought it was great. You know, better than the Jetsons. Who needs all that stuff? Look, I've got a robot right here. But in practice, turns out robot waiters have been bleeping and blorping in restaurants across China since 2014 and still haven't lived up to expectations, according to the article from CNN.
Did the article say anything about them turning it off and turning it back on again?
Oh, cute.
for anybody who's been in a courthouse or anything, or any like crappy used car dealership in the past 20 years, they have that machine, or even an ice rink, they have that machine that drops a cup and fills it up with hot cocoa.
That's right.
And that thing's been around since I started like skating at an ice rink at about 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah, sure.
You know, well, that was the 8. Come on. I'm not that old. But had it, and they managed to master it. They can't get a robot to carry soup. But they can get, you know, but apparently they can serve you hot cocoa. And I don't know. I think that's just.
Well, I think we're asking too much of mobile technology. We're just trying a little too hard. But it means to me that we're right on the cusp, honestly, is that, you know, fine. So we're all interested in the future. We're all interested in technology and having to lighten the load of worrying about a person standing on their feet 8, 12, 16 hours a day. So some of us can order food because we don't know how to prepare food anymore. But we're getting closer and closer to that Wall-E by and large concept where we all sit in Barco loungers that roll around the house for us, and we're getting dangerously close to not knowing how to do anything. We're all willing to press like on a food recipe that's done in under 15 seconds that asserts itself as wonderful and awesome at the end of it, but that doesn't mean that we know how to do anything, because when was the last time any of us picked up a knife and actually started prepping our own vegetables without buying the easy prep stuff from the store? It's just a further, as much as I love the furthering of technology and I want my Star Trek replicator yesterday, we still have to remember that, you know what, someone's got to be that TV chef. Someone's got to be the person willing to burn some food at home. Even if you have to burn water, you still tried. That's a step versus a robot that can't carry a cup across a room without dumping it on somebody. I guess I'm getting at that. I don't want to lose.
Maybe the robot wanted to.
Well, that's the robot laws. Where's
did
Asimov's
you see
laws?
Runaway with Tom Selleck.
I did. Gene Simmons
was
in
that.
That's
an excellent movie.
Oh yeah,
excellent movie.
I'm just waiting for, you know, all this gearing towards robots so that iRobot with Will Smith becomes reality. Because I'm willing to, you know, save some of this old 80s stuff and then sell it for big bucks on eBay then.
even those Converses that were.
But they were so cool, man. Even covered in oil or whatever that junk was. It was kind of cool.
Shoehorned in.
Yeah. Look, Robo Spiders notwithstanding. What were you about to say there, Everwolf?
No, what I was going to say is that with the robots, let's face it, you know that they're building them and to do certain tasks, but just like anything, it's going to come at a cost. I doubt that it's being designed with security in mind.
Right.
So you can actually eventually have these robots that were serving someone. It's like, ooh, there's the prime minister. And then, boom, it turns into assassin mode. Kind of like a Zoolander thing.
I was actually going to bring that up.
But with robots, yeah.
So at least this one would be able to turn left, okay?
And it would actually dump the coffee on purpose this time.
Yes.
Yes, it would.
And somewhere Decker
can't turn left, Pop.
Yes, Zoolander was real.
Think about the Black Lung
Academy for kids that can't read good.
That's right, because it's a place for ants.
Speaking of technology to help kids can't read good,
That
an article about some very wealth upstanding individuals using their wealth to get implants that are not over the counter, you might say?
Well, right. The article from Daily Mail from overseas there in the UK says that a pair of wealthy Americans are looking for brain implants on the black market that will allow them to communicate with each other just using the power of thought. Now, this is some high vaunted stuff. I bought a device called the Neural Interface Adapter in the 90s from a company, maybe early 2000s, excuse me, from a company that made, it was OZ, I believe was what they were, the name of the company, and they made solid state drives and high performance RAM. And this thing would supposedly allow you to build a human computer interface. And it was the world's strangest looking headband that you put on your, around your head. And it led to a box that plugged into USB and it did nothing. As far as I can tell, it really just didn't work. It did nothing. I felt like I just funded one of the silliest ideas because I want this. Who wouldn't want to be able to communicate privately from their thoughts to another person? Isn't that what encryption's about anyway? Is protecting your data from one point to another. So who wouldn't want these things? Or maybe, you know, okay, fine. So maybe this article talks about transhumanism and the desire to reach towards what is perceived as more physical perfection. But isn't it really about communication through technology? Or am I misreading that, Coop?
I don't know. I'm really concerned when people go that far with their implants. Because, you know, there's a limit to what the technology can handle now. And, you know, especially the industry that we're all either in or getting into definitely shows that most products are crap as far as security goes too. So I don't really want anything attached to my noodle that can easily be hacked. And who knows what kind of damage can come of that. You know, I don't want any, there's a limit to what I want to put in my body. You know, I can understand, you know, keys for turning certain things on, but anything that invasive just scares the living hell out of me. I don't know about you guys.
Well, we actually had at Saha a demo of, I think it was the NeuroSky. Wolf's got one. I think the first one that we saw was, if you had video, you could see that he's holding it up right now. We had, was it Big Will Bartel there? I think he was the one who bought it, brought it in. And same guy, he used to bring in half a door to show the status of his Arduino products. It was, or wow. Projects. It was pretty good. But with this, once again, I want to go on these implant things. I want to go the other way with it a little bit, because they're making such a big deal about two people or however many it is with way too much money to do anything decent with it. Thinking about putting stuff in their heads, you know, let them and then say, you know what, call us when you're done. And we'll see, you know, we'll see if we've got. Was it? It wasn't that the big premise of like Sword Art Online was those people put the headgear on their head.
Yep.
And then there was a little microwave thing, and then the guy threatened if they ever, you know, if they. I'm sorry if I'm giving away plot points. if they left the game, you know, he'd fry their brain with microwaves.
Yeah, no, that's open in the first 10 minutes of the anime, so that's fine. There's your anime recommendation for the week. If you haven't watched it, Sword Art Online, there you go. You just lost a week of your life, but you'll enjoy it.
you lost a week of your life. And don't come, look, I'm not into anything too cerebral or anything like that. If we have a bunch of guys that watch anime and stuff that pop up on here and they go, oh, that's not the cool one to watch. I'm sorry. It was the one that was on Netflix with more than 10 episodes.
That's right.
So I put it on and I ended up liking it.
Yeah.
The game sucked. I mean, the game was terrible.
Well, yeah, but there was a real follow-up game?
Oh, there is a PS3 game, and it's a great concept because you can fly, right? You can
sure.
You can fly in the game, and you can fight enemies in the air and stuff. But
the concept is still ahead of our imagination. Is what the real problem is. Is that the concept our reach exceeds our grasp at this point?
So,
well,
talking about
implants,
they
couldn't include a few more enemies. Yeah. I mean, that was it. There was a lack of enemies, a lack of terrain. I want, giant battles with varied enemies. I don't really care about, if the mechanics are solid, but, I got to fight the same two guys over and over again or see the same terrain over and over again. I'm going to put down that game pretty quickly.
Sure.
I played South Park Stick of Truth 8 times and beaten it just because I liked playing the game.
Okay, but getting back to the implants angle of the story here, and I'm very curious to know what, Ivrybolf, you have this thing, so what did you think, and what does it do?
Well, it's actually pretty good, because what it does is it kind of trains you to, first off, you need to calibrate it, so you kind of have little apps that, link to it through Bluetooth that you can actually test, meditate. There's even a zombie head explosion game. So if you concentrate in a certain way, then you can make their heads explode. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And the cool thing is that there's actually, an actual SDK for it. So you can actually start writing your own apps and do different things with it. So why not say, hey, I don't feel like typing my Python code. It's like, I'm just going to think about certain things. And then, boom, it just prints out what I want.
I think there's actually something to that if they can get as far as allowing you to type and lock down your thoughts to that kind of control, that kind of granularity. But is it there yet? So have you seen anything that allows you to do more than a rudimentary, if you think left, essentially, or think about a specific act, you can cause something else to take place on screen? Is there anything that's that particular yet that you've come across?
No, that would be more of a heavy cost, so you'd have to do, actually train your brain or actually record what you're thinking of while you're doing that typing,
Yeah.
And then
build a map, essentially.
If you actually have a baseline of it, then it may work, or it may still give some, auto correct errors, but who knows?
Well, so that's really interesting, but Coop actually brings up another point here in the chat window talking about how there's a presenter who has colorblindness, but has an implant actually directly in. Well, here, Coop, tell us.
Yeah, I met him at the Body Hack Con. He was one of the keynote speakers, and just a really nice guy, though kind of scary at first. Well, until you listen to the whole talk, because he actually has an antenna implanted in the base of his skull.
What?
And because of it, it's fully connected to his brain. It's also fully connected to the internet. And this sensor, it allows him to hear color, not see color, but hear it.
Hear
it's
color.
Like a bone conduction mic, basically.
Wow.
That reacts by color. And through it, he's been able to meet random people, famous people, and give them a song based on the color of their face. By coming up, getting into their personal private space and taking the thing and just running his scanner along their face and then being able to take that recording of it and give them an MP3 that is basically the song of their face, as he put it. And it's kind of interesting because he also went went into it saying, yeah, it's fully connected to the internet, and I have been hacked. And he said that he actually enjoyed it and invites people to do it because, hey, it's fully connected. He enjoys the random experiences of the colors given to him by total strangers.
But I would almost equate that to the equivalent of roofying somebody where you force them to experience something that you did not ask to have.
So, I want this in my brain so that I could see if Boyd's face gives me a song and then I play it back and I'm like, you know what? I could see that for Blair Underwood too. Nobody knows who Blair Underwood is.
No, I agree. I agree.
One fun thing, you mentioned that, in the talk, he actually mentioned that it was kind of ironic thing that skin tones are not, white, black, red, what have you. They're variations of orange.
Mm-hmm. Pigmentation.
And he's verified that by the different variations of sound, all relating to different shades of orange.
So
it seemed kind of very interesting to me. It's like, we are one people, we are all orange.
Yes, which is terrific from a color hue perspective. But at the same time, there's something to be said for where this technology might eventually go. Because if it starts out with, okay, so here is the sound. I mean, I don't know about the rest of you guys, I played Myst for hours when I was younger. And I spent all this time learning what the sounds in the steam tunnels meant, so I knew to turn left or right or whatever. So why couldn't this implant eventually teach someone what colors were represented by different sounds along a spectrum and different octaves? I think that's brilliant, but what it can't do so far is it is unable to communicate in a meaningful way what that means to that person. It can't represent it Daredevil style or something like that. So we have no way to depict the output yet. But this is proof positive that there are very likely going to be ways to do this that are more science fact than fiction.
I can't hear a sound behind me. I can't hear a sound from behind me and then turn around, automatically just back fist whatever the heck's there. A la Daredevil, you're right.
Not yet.
I'm waiting for that one.
You probably would just need a crown of sensors to be able to do something crazy like that.
But it could happen. Hey, look what happened with the power glove sensors.
I highly, highly suggest it.
And what's the gentleman's name?
Neil Harbison. Two S's in the last name.
Neil Harbison. HARBISSON. It's a TED Talk. Very good. Mm-hmm. That'll be something interesting to check out. And on that note, we should probably draw it to a close and say thank you so much to everyone who joined us tonight. Ivory Wolf, Cooper, Vesh, thank you guys so much for getting on the line here so that we could talk about these issues. And thank you so much for tuning in. Saha Says will be back, and we look forward to your input, and thank you for listening.